Chapter 8. It was morning. He knew it was morning because Jerry Sim had gone, and Peter the footman had come and put out the candles, drawn back one of the curtains, and begun quietly to tidy up. Whether it was morning or evening, Friday or Sunday, made no difference, it was all just the same, the gnawing, unmitigated, agonizing pain, never ceasing for an instant, the consciousness of life inexorably waning but not yet extinguished, the approach of that ever-dreaded and hateful death, which was the only reality, and always the same falsity. What were days, weeks, hours, in such a case? Will you have some tea, sir? He wants things to be regular, and wishes the gentlefolk to drink tea in the morning, thought Ivan Ilyich, and only said no. Wouldn't you like to move onto the sofa, sir? He wants to tidy up the room, and I'm in the way. I am a cleanliness and disorder, he thought, and said only, no, leave me alone. The man went on bustling about. Ivan Ilyich stretched out his hand. Peter came up, ready to help. What is it, sir? My watch. Peter took the watch, which was close at hand, and gave it to his master. 8:30. Are they up?
No, sir, except Vladimir Ivanovich the son, who has gone to school. Praskovya Fedorovna ordered me to wake her if you ask for her.
Shall I do so?
No, there's no need to.
Perhaps I'd better have some tea, he thought, and added aloud, yes, bring me some tea. Peter went to the door, but Ivan Ilyich dreaded being left alone.
How can I keep him here?
Oh yes, my medicine.
Peter, give me my medicine.
Why not?
Perhaps it may still do some good.
He took a spoonful and swallowed it.
No, it won't help.
It's all tomfoolery, all deception, he decided, as soon as he became aware of the familiar, sickly, hopeless taste.
No, I can't believe in it any longer.
But the pain, why this pain? If it would only cease just for a moment.
And he moaned.
Peter turned towards him.
It's all right.
Go and fetch me some tea.
Peter went out.
Left alone, Ivan Ilyich groaned not so much with pain, terrible thought that was, as from mental anguish. Always and forever the same, always these endless days and nights. If only it would come quicker.
If only what would come quicker?
Death, darkness, no, no, anything rather than death. When Peter returned with the tea on a tray, Ivan Ilyich stared at him for a time in perplexity, not realizing who and what he was. Peter was disconcerted by that look, and his embarrassment brought Ivan Ilyich to himself.
Oh, tea.
All right, put it down. Only help me to wash and put on a clean shirt. And Ivan Ilyich began to wash. With pauses for rest, he washed his hands and then his face, cleaned his teeth, brushed his hair, looked in the glass. He was terrified by what he saw, especially by the limp way in which his hair clung to his pallid forehead. While his shirt was being changed, he knew that he would be still more frightened at the sight of his body, so he avoided looking at it. Finally he was ready. He drew on a dressing gown, wrapped himself in a plaid, and sat down in the armchair to take his tea. For a moment he felt refreshed, but as soon as he began to drink the tea he was again aware of the same taste, and the pain also returned. He finished it with an effort, and then lay down stretching out his legs, and dismissed Peter.
Always the same.
Now a spark of hope flashes up, then a sea of despair rages, and always pain, always despair, and always the same. When alone he had a dreadful and distressing desire to call someone, but he knew beforehand that with others present it would be still worse. Another dose of morphine, to lose consciousness.
I will tell him, the doctor, that he must think of something else.
It's impossible, impossible, to go on like this. An hour and another pass like that. But now there is a ring at the doorbell.
Perhaps it's the doctor?
It is. He comes in fresh, hearty, plump, and cheerful, with that look on his face that seems to say, there now, you're in a panic about something, but we'll arrange it all for you directly. The doctor knows this expression is out of place here, but he has put it on once for all and can't take it off, like a man who has put on a frock coat in the morning, to pay a round of calls. The doctor rubs his hands vigorously and reassuringly.
Brr. How cold it is. There's such a sharp frost, just let me warm myself. He says, as if it were only a matter of waiting till he was warm, and then he would put everything right. Well now, how are you? Ivan Illich feels that the doctor would like to say, well, how are our affairs? But that even he feels that this would not do, and says instead, what sort of a night have you had? Ivan Illich looks at him as much as to say, are you really never ashamed of lying? But the doctor does not wish to understand this question, and Ivan Illich says, just as terrible as ever. The pain never leaves me and never subsides. If only something, yes, you sick people are always like that, there, now I think I am warm enough. Even Praskovya Fedorovna, who is so particular, could find no fault with my temperature. Well, now I can say good morning, and the doctor presses his patient's hand. Then dropping his former playfulness, he begins with the most serious face to examine the patient, feeling his pulse and taking his temperature, and then begins the sounding and auscultation. Ivan Illich knows quite well and definitely that all this is nonsense and pure deception, but when the doctor, getting down on his knee, leans over him, putting his ear first higher then lower, and performs various gymnastic movements over him with a significant expression on his face, Ivan Illich submits to it all, as he used to submit to the speeches of the lawyers, though he knew very well that they were all lying and why they were lying. The doctor, kneeling on the sofa, is still sounding him, when Praskovya Fedorovna's silk dress rustles at the door and she is heard scolding Peter for not having let her know of the doctor's arrival. She comes in, kisses her husband, and at once proceeds to prove that she has been up a long time already, and only owing to a misunderstanding failed to be there when the doctor arrived. Ivan Illich looks at her, scans her all over, sets against her the whiteness and plumpness and cleanness of her hands and neck, the gloss of her hair, and the sparkle of her vivacious eyes. He hates her with his whole soul. And the thrill of hatred he feels for her makes him suffer from her touch. Her attitude towards him and his diseases is still the same. Just as the doctor had adopted a certain relation to his patient which he could not abandon, so had she formed one towards him, that he was not doing something he ought to do and was himself to blame, and that she reproached him lovingly for this, and she could not now change that attitude. You see, he doesn't listen to me, and doesn't take his medicine at the proper time. And above all, he lies in a position that is no doubt bad for him, with his legs up. She described how he made Gerasim hold his legs up. The doctor smiled with a contemptuous affability that said, what's to be done? These sick people do have foolish fancies of that kind, but we must forgive them. When the examination was over, the doctor looked at his watch, and then Praskovya Fedorovna announced to Ivan Illich that it was of course as he pleased, but she had sent today for a celebrated specialist who would examine him and have a consultation with Michael Danilovic, their regular doctor. Please don't raise any objections. I am doing this for my own sake, she said ironically, letting it be felt that she was doing it all for his sake, and only said this to leave him no right to refuse. He remained silent, knitting his brows. He felt that he was surrounded and involved in a mesh of falsity, that it was hard to unravel anything. Everything she did for him was entirely for her own sake, and she told him she was doing for herself what she actually was doing for herself, as if that was so incredible that he must understand the opposite. At 11:30 the celebrated specialist arrived. Again the sounding began and the significant conversations in his presence and in another room, about the kidneys and the appendix, and the questions and answers, with such an air of importance that again, instead of the real question of life and death, which now alone confronted him, the question arose of the kidney and appendix, which were not behaving as they ought to, and would now be attached by Michael Danilovich and the specialist, and forced to amend their ways. The celebrated specialist took leave of him with a serious though not hopeless look, and in reply to the timid question Ivan Illich, with eyes glistening with fear and hope, put to him as to whether there was a chance of recovery, said that he could not vouch for it but there was a possibility. The look of hope with which Ivan Illich watched the doctor out was so pathetic that Praskovya Fedorovna, seeing it, even wept as she left the room, to hand the doctor his fee. The gleam of hope kindled by the doctor's encouragement did not last long. The same room, the same pictures, curtains, wall, paper, medicine bottles, were all there, and the same aching, suffering body, and Ivan Ilyich began to moan. They gave him a subcutaneous injection and he sank into oblivion. It was twilight when he came to. They brought him his dinner and he swallowed some beef tea with difficulty, and then everything was the same again and night was coming on. After dinner, at 7 o'clock, Praskovya Fedorovna came into the room in evening dress, her full bosom pushed up by her corset, and with traces of powder on her face. She had reminded him in the morning that they were going to the theater. Sarah Bernhardt was visiting the town and they had a box, which he had insisted on their taking. Now he had forgotten about it and her toilet offended him, but he concealed his vexation when he remembered that he had himself insisted on their securing a box and going, because it would be an instructive and aesthetic pleasure for the children. Praskovya Fedorovna came in, self-satisfied but yet with a rather guilty air. She sat down and asked how he was, but, as he saw, only for the sake of asking and not in order to learn about it, knowing that there was nothing to learn, and then went on to, what she really wanted to say, that she would not on any account have gone, but that the box had been taken and Helen and their daughter were going, as well as Petrushchev the examining magistrate, their daughter's fiancé, and that it was out of the question to let them go alone. But that she would have much preferred to sit with him for a while, and he must be sure to follow the doctor's orders while she was away. Oh, and Fedor Petrovich the fiancé would like to come in. May he? And Lisa? All right. Their daughter came in full evening dress, her fresh young flesh exposed, making a show of that very flesh, which in his own case caused so much suffering, strong, healthy, evidently in love, and impatient with illness, suffering, and death, because they interfered with her happiness. Fedor Petrovich came in too, in evening dress, his hair curled a la capole, a tight stiff collar round his long sinewy neck, an enormous white shirt front and narrow black trousers tightly stretched over his strong thighs. He had one white glove tightly drawn on, and was holding his opera hat in his hand. Following him the schoolboy crept in unnoticed, in a new uniform, poor little fellow, and wearing gloves. Terribly dark shadows showed under his eyes, the meaning of which Ivan Ilyich knew well. His son had always seemed pathetic to him, and now it was dreadful to see the boy's frightened look of pity. It seemed to Ivan Ilyich that Vasya was the only one besides Gerasim, who understood and pitied him. They all sat down and again asked how he was. A silence followed. Lisa asked her mother about the opera glasses, and there was an altercation between mother and daughter, as to who had taken them and where they had been put. This occasioned some unpleasantness. Fedor Petrovich inquired of Ivan Ilyich whether he had ever seen Sarah Bernhardt. Ivan Ilyich did not at first catch the question, but then replied, "No, have you seen her before?" "Yes, and on Randall Cooper." Praskovya Fedorovna mentioned some roles in which Sarah Bernhardt was particularly good. Her daughter disagreed. Conversation sprang up as to the elegance and realism of her acting, the sort of conversation that is always repeated and is always the same. In the midst of the conversation Fedor Petrovich glanced at Ivan Ilyich and became silent. The others also looked at him and grew silent. Ivan Ilyich was staring with glittering eyes straight before him, evidently indignant with them. This had to be rectified, but it was impossible to do so. The silence had to be broken, but for a time no one dared to break it and they all became afraid that the conventional deception would suddenly become obvious and the truth become plain to all. Lisa was the first to pluck up courage and break that silence, but by trying to hide what everybody was feeling, she betrayed it. "Well, if we are going, it's time to start," she said, looking at her watch, a present from her father, and with a faint and significant smile at Fedor Petrovich relating to something known only to them. She got up with a rustle of her dress. They all rose, said good night, and went away. When they had gone it seemed to Ivan Ilyich that he felt better, the falsity had gone with them. But the pain remained, that same pain and that same fear, that made everything monotonously alike, nothing harder and nothing easier. Everything was worse. Again minute followed minute and hour followed hour. Everything remained the same and there was no cessation. And the inevitable end of it all became more and more terrible.
"Yes, send Jerry some here," he replied to a question Peter asked.